Thank you, Fran. I think you must be very proud of Fran, Father Fran. I didn't meet him since his ordination, but I got his blessing today, and I appreciate it. And I would like to thank him for arranging this, and particularly to the president of the college and the staff for allowing me this time to speak to so many interested students. I really am grateful. I was here before. I came in 1983, I think. We were late, I know. We arrived late. But I appreciated that visit too, and I have met many of your students in different places, and I have been impressed by all of them in many ways. So tonight I come here, and I have been asked really to touch on the subject of China. I was there most of my life, and I loved it, and I would long to get back there, but the time has not arrived yet. I'll try to explain something of that to you as I go along. But I'm connected now in my old age. For the last 40 years, I've been connected with the Legion of Mary. You probably know what it is. You have five groups in this college. I know it all over the world. Strange thing that it was only started 70 years ago by Mr. Frank Duff, and in his lifetime, before he died, it was everywhere. I wonder are there many founders that could say that. But in their lifetime, their organization or their society was existing in every country of the world. That is true of the Legion of Mary. I knew Mr. Duff personally, and I was fascinated by his brilliance and by his extraordinary sanctity. Now that is what I'm really doing all over Southeast Asia at the moment. But I have to come back. I'm not an American citizen, and I only have a green card. And I have to come back every 2 years to have it chopped. But I'm very glad to come back and to pass through the places. I was 12 years in the United States, and I think I've covered nearly every corner of the States and Canada. And so, like my old friend Bill Pefley, father of Father Fran, they invite me here for a few days, and I'm on my way up to Connecticut to meet the only real bishop of Shanghai, Bishop Gong Ping Mei. He was my bishop. He's 90, but it doesn't take away from the fact that he's the only legal bishop of China, of Shanghai at the moment. He was in prison for 30 years, and one of his crimes was that he had tolerated the Legion of Mary and protected it. So I hope to go up there to meet him, and also around him quite a group of young Legion, well, they were young when I knew them, when they were in the University of Shanghai, girls and boys that for being members of the Legion of Mary were put in prison for 20, 25 years. They're still out, they're out there, and they're living very poorly, but they still have a smile on their face, and I'll try to tell you some of this story as we go along. Now, I was ordained, as Fran suggests, a long while ago. I was ordained in 1929. I was only 23, I was a young priest. They had to get a dispensation for me to be ordained. And when I was ordained, they sent me straight to China. Now, in those days, we didn't really know a great deal about China. Communications were not what they are today. But still, I longed to get to the mission in which I was to work. It took us 6 weeks to get to Shanghai, and it took us 4 more days up the Yangtze River, 700 miles up to our diocese. And then I was not there very long when my bishop, he was short of priests and short of money, short of everything. He sent me up, even as a young priest of 24 or 25, to become a parish priest of an area. Well, you don't become parish priest at 24 anywhere. Least of all in Ireland, you have to wait till you're about 70. I found myself a parish priest, but he said, Father, I'm afraid there's no church there. Rather like Fran himself now. And he said, there is no house. Do what you can. Well, there was not much I could do at the time, but anyway, it was a very large parish. I had to do a tremendous amount of traveling because I had 24 missions. There were no cars, there were no roads, there was nothing. So I walked. It was good for my health. And I walked. It took me 2 months just to walk around each of those places and stay two or three nights in each place, sleep there, baptize the babies, instruct the people, marry those that had to be married and those who were dead, bury them, and bless the graves, and then move on to the next place. I did that for a long while, but I felt very helpless in doing it, and eventually it was my bishop who suggested that I start the Legion of Mary because he had no priests and he had no sisters. Well, after starting the Legion, I had no problem. I had 5 groups. Altogether, I must have had over 100 active members, disciplined, dedicated, and ready to do anything. So I could go off on my missions cheerfully and know that those who were being executed in the local prison would be cared for, would be instructed, and would be baptized before they died. Now that's a great thing for a priest to know, that if he's on one job, that his other jobs will be done in some way. So I was there even when the Japanese arrived. The Japanese came in 1937, 4,000 Japanese came into the house, into the town, and it was a very tricky situation, but strange to say, it all turned out to my good. I was able to protect 1,500 women and children from being insulted, and also I was able to protect them for a long while. And while they were being protected, I tell you, the 5 groups of the Legion of Mary were not inactive. They were working on them and instructing them, and people who normally would be very busy in their business, in their shops and so on, they had time to listen. And when they listened, they all came into the church. So it was a difficult time, but God had his ways of bringing people in. Anyway, the Japanese then expelled me from the town. I was Irish, I should have been neutral, but they didn't recognize that neutrality, and they put me out. I had to go down to Hanyang. I was away for 2 years. Away for 2 years, and I eat my heart out thinking that because that parish had no priest, nothing could happen and everything would collapse because Father McGraw was not there. Well, I had a lesson to learn, to cure my pride, and when I got back after 2.5 years, I found the parish running smoothly without me. A little humiliating, but I had to swallow that. Obviously, they had no mass, they had no sacraments, but they did everything else possible. And at a day like this, when the Holy Father is talking to the lay people and asking them to remind them that by their very baptism they are bound to be apostolic. It's not a case of John became a priest, Mary became a nun. Thank God I escaped. You escaped nothing. Whether you're married or single, you still have the obligation to spread the gift of your faith. Well, now I went back and I found that the Chinese had learned that without any Holy Father telling them about it. And then I was, after 16 years, I was 16 years in China before I ever got home. I was not well, really under the weather, and my bishop sent me home to Ireland. But while I was there, as you probably remember, I had been there under Chiang Kai-shek. Now, Chiang Kai-shek has been much maligned. Lots of books written about him, they annoy me intensely. They didn't know Chiang Kai-shek. Chiang Kai-shek was a fine general. And he was actually doing in China in the 1940s. Remember that he took over about 1927, and then after that you had the Japanese come in and he had to fight them. Then he had the warlords and he had to fight them, and he had to try to win them over. He had all the problems and he had to reorganize the country. Well, when the communists then came in on top of them, he really was not ready to fight them. And as you know, he had to go to, they fled to Taiwan. But what did he do in Taiwan? I've just come from Taiwan. Taiwan is a fabulously wealthy country. All due to Chiang Kai-shek. Good methods of economy, good discipline. Everybody admits that. I like to mention to everybody that every single, I've never seen so many taxis in my life as in Taipei. And every taxi is the very latest American or Japanese car. Who gives it to them? Their own buying. Every taxi man buys his own taxi and takes good care of it. Give you an idea of how the economy has jumped ahead. Well, anyway, Chiang Kai-shek was defeated and the communists were coming in. Now, at that time, there was the Holy Father's representative. He had been in Dublin as a secretary to the nunciature. Then he was sent as delegate to Africa. And while he was in Africa, he met Edel Quinn. Now, the legionaries will know that name. She was a lovely young Irish girl and dying of TB. She knew she was condemned to die, and the doctors would have said 1 year and she'll be dead. But Mr. Duff let her have her request. Let me go to Africa to give the last years of my life on a mission. And he was blamed for letting her go because they said she couldn't possibly live. Anyway, she lived 8 years. And Edel is better known in Africa than any priest or bishop. She left an indelible mark on not only on the clergy, but on all the lay people and all the presidia of that of the legion of that area. Anyway, he met her. This nuncio met her, and then he was moved to China. When he got to China in 1947, what was the picture? You're too young to remember it. 1947 was the moving in of communist forces into the north of China. Now, he saw immediately that Chiang Kai-shek was not able to hold the country and that they would be in, and when communism came in at that time. Now, thank God, the only communist country left is China. And to me, it's a very small group left. Even Albania has given them up. Even North Korea doesn't negotiate with them. They're isolated. It's a very interesting situation. What will happen? We hope and pray that something very peaceful will happen to let it live a more normal way of life. Anyway, he knew that this was going to happen and that when they came in, that every priest and sister would be put out of China. Every church would be closed, every hospital, every institution would be taken over by the communists. Did that happen? Oh, yes. Of course it did. But he knew if that happens, we still have a Catholic church here. We still have to look after it. What are we to do? No priests, no sisters. The Chinese priests and sisters, they were put in prison. Well, he thought of Edel Quinn in Africa. And he said, if God can use a dying girl to revive a country like Africa, that's what I need. And he thought of the Legion of Mary, and he looked for it in Shanghai. There was none. There was nothing in China. But one of my colleagues, a Columban father, he told them that there was a priest 700 miles up in the center of China who had the Legion. Well, he said, call him down quick. And I was brought down to Shanghai, and the Archbishop said, Father, I want you as fast as you can to go all over China, and China's a very big country, and start the Legion of Mary before it's too late. And even though I realized the Legion of Mary was an extraordinarily strong organization, I said, Archbishop, do you not think it's too late? And he replied, do what you're told. We don't like that expression today. We like to consult today. Even if he's the president of the country, you like to consult. You don't like to say, I obeyed blindly. Well, I'm afraid we used to do that. He told me to go ahead, and I went ahead, and I started in the famous Aurora University of Shanghai, as I've said many times, the most sophisticated university I've ever been in. Most extraordinary place, very beautiful. You had the Jesuit University on one side, and you had the Madames of the Sacred Heart on the other, with this university, and it was made up of the very, very wealthy, very sophisticated Chinese, at that time particularly. I often mentioned that the girls all wore silks. Nowadays they don't do that. Silk is still a precious garment. Anyway, that's where I was sent. And I didn't believe anything could happen as a result of it. But within half an hour I had my first group started. The students apparently, not only there but in Beijing and the other places, the students realized what was happening. They realized they were going to be deprived of their priests and sisters and that they would have to do something for their church. And so they started the first group, and within no time they had split into about 15 groups in Shanghai. Well, I thought time to leave. I went up to Hankou in the central China, and from that on up to Beijing. And the rector of the Beijing Furin University, he allowed me to talk to the students, and the response was exactly the same. Here's something, under the banner of Mary and the light of the Holy Spirit, we can do something for our church. And so we started the Legion in Beijing, and by the time the communists came in, they were faced by a formidable force of young students. What doing? Guns? No. What the Legion of Mary is famous for, and its main instrument, evangelization. If they had the faith, they had an obligation to share it. And each week they went out sharing their faith with the people, and at that time the people, being rather afraid of some force they didn't even understand, like communism, they wanted baptism, they wanted instruction, and they got it. Who gave it? The students. It really was an extraordinary time. But anyway, I had to get out of Beijing. If the communists came in and found me there, well, they would stop my work. So I went on to Tianjin, and from Tianjin round to down to Hankou, started the first courier. That's a bigger council in Shanghai, and then flew on to Hong Kong. Why I went to Hong Kong was just to make sure that I had some contact very close to China, outside China. I started in Hong Kong, and to this day, I suppose you know, Hong Kong is one of the wealthiest places in the world. Fabulous. Fabulous city to visit. The Legion is terribly strong there. And you have all these young people in the schools, they're in it too, young executives. It got an extraordinary grip on the people, the Catholics of Hong Kong. Anyway, then I went back into Canton and southwest China and over to Sichuan. And I met one of your young teachers who has been in Sichuan since the last few years, better tonight. They've been teaching English there. As you know, they all want people to go in now and teach English. English is the strong language. Anyway, I went there and I expected that I wouldn't be able to remain, that I would be there several years before the communists would catch up with me. But actually, in 1 year, they arrived in Chongqing. Chongqing was the place that the Americans and Chiang Kai-shek, they fought together from there to try and beat the communists, try and beat the Japanese. So I remained there, and when they came into Chongqing, within a few days they came down, they found out where I was and knew what I was doing and told me I had to stop the Legion of Mary. I said, you can't stop this. This is a religious organization. In your constitution you give freedom of religion. You're free to believe anything, free to do anything, free to go to church. So I was surprised when they allowed me back to Shanghai. I went back to Shanghai, and I was there 1 year with Bishop Walsh, the famous Bishop Walsh of Maryknoll. And he knew he was going to be arrested. We all knew we were going to be arrested. But they left us for a whole year, and people disappeared off the streets at night. You get up in the morning, and so many people were gone from the neighbors. You didn't know why. You dare not ask, where were they? But that was happening, and it had an effect of certainly frightened me, because I wasn't very courageous, and I knew very well that I had started the Legion of Mary. And the newspapers every day told us that the Legion of Mary was a secret organization set up by the America. Well, there's no such thing. It had nothing to do with America at that time. It started in Ireland, and it's a religious organization. But that's what they were saying, and so we all knew, even all the legionaries knew, that they were in trouble. Now, after about 1 year, I still carried on working with it. After a year, they came and surrounded the house one night, came in and looked for me, and came up to my room. There were other priests in the house, and they said they wanted me, and they were going to take me away, but they took 2 hours at it. What were they doing? Searching every book and every drawer in my room. Well, I wasn't foolish enough to leave any Legion of Mary literature around, because that would involve other people. I had destroyed any letters and so on. But they were there for a couple of hours, and there was nothing in my room except a picture of Christ the King on the wall, an empty table, and so on. And eventually they led me out and brought me away for 2 years and 8 months. And when I came out of the prison, the priest showed me the newspaper that was published just after my arrest. It was my room, all right. But the picture of Christ the King was not there. There was a bevy of young beauties, lightly clad, around my table. Rather typical. We were used to that kind of thing, but it's interesting just to mention it. The table had a transmitter and radios and so on. I was supposed to be using these as a tool of America. Now, it's interesting to note that during 2 years and 8 months of constant interrogation, they never once asked me about the girlfriend. Lies, when there are lies, they recognize it. They never once asked me about a transmitter or a radio. Anyway, I was brought into this, I don't know where it was, in the French concession at that time. There was a prison, they brought me in, and the prisoners, they're afraid that the prisoners will commit suicide. That's the first thing that's in their mind. And so they look for knives in your pocket, and they actually took everything out of my pockets, my money, my watch, my penknife, a piece of twine that I might have thrown around my neck, my laces out of my shoes, every button on my pants. I don't know how many buttons you have to swallow to kill yourself, but they were afraid I might try. They took everything from me and stripped me and left me standing there, took the medals off my neck. Two machine guns, one on either side, and a naked man in the middle. One thing they didn't see. My brown scapular. You know the brown scapular of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. I believe you have a couple of ex-students here who have entered Carmel in Buffalo. Our Lady of Mount Carmel scapular. One in front and one behind and a string over the shoulder. They never saw it. Now, I don't know what you think of that, but I'll go on a while. They made me dress and brought me to a cell, and I lay down. I was so tired that I just fell fast asleep immediately. Even with all that kind of machinery around me, I still fell asleep. And the next day, I was put in a small cell, and for 3 months, every day or every second day, that same team came in to search me. They didn't trust that I would have hidden something somewhere, a knife, that I would kill myself. So they stripped me every day. They never saw the scapular. I told this, obviously, to all the Carmelite convents throughout the Philippine Islands, and God knows there are so many, and they make use of it. And I don't mind that, because I have no doubt in my mind at all that it was a sign from our Blessed Mother. I had consecrated myself to Jesus through Mary, the de Montfort consecration, and in that, when you've made your consecration to Jesus through Mary, you promise to quit worrying, to stop thinking about yesterday and tomorrow. That's what you promise. And if you live up to it, there's nothing to worry about. And here was her first sign that she was with me. And then one day they came in after 3 months. Once again, they tore off everything. I was getting tired of it. They said, "Where did you get that?" Pointing to the scapular. I didn't answer them. They took it off. And they brought it away, and when I came out of the prison after 2 years and 8 months, they handed me my watch and my scapular. So I still have it as a precious memory. Anyway, after a little while, I was moved from that cell into the cell where I was in solitary confinement for the rest of my time in the prison. Now, you don't do this in America. I've been in a great number of prisons in the United States during my 12 years here. Leavenworth, and a great number of them, and I know that the man in solitary confinement, they watch him very carefully because he goes mad. And they have to take him out and give him a walk like walking a horse around. Let him out of the place. My cell was that width only. I could not stretch my fingers that way. I had to bend my fingers to touch the wall. When I lay on the floor, it was just my length. There was a man from Texas, some cells from me. He was 6'4", and when he lay down, he had to bend up his legs. There was no bed, nor a mattress. There was no table. There was no chair. There was nothing. Nothing except a bucket. Bucket for convenience. They stank to high heaven. But that was part of your treatment. That's all you had in the prison. You weren't allowed to talk. You weren't allowed to cough. You weren't allowed to sneeze. You were never allowed to close your eyes. Even though, in the beginning, the first weeks, they keep dragging you out of your prison at night. 12 o'clock, drag you up to the under lights and judges that change every couple of hours and guards that change every couple of hours, but you stand on answering stupid questions. And then they bring you down, put you in your cell, and they watch you to see if you close your eyes. Well, you've read about these, I'm sure, in many books that were written. But it's a difficult thing to keep awake. And you would wonder how you could keep sane in it. We had no books to read. We had no paper. We had no pencil. We had nothing to do. You were to sit there and think of your crime. There were two tins of rice, one at 9 o'clock and one at 3 p.m. A cup of hot water after the first meal and a cup of hot water after the second. No more. Not even in the heat of the Shanghai summer did you get any more water to drink. Now they knew you wouldn't die from it. Nor they also knew you wouldn't die from the bugs, bed bugs. I don't know, I hope we've no more bed bugs in America. They are horrible. And while I'm a man and I was used to traveling around the little missions and I was eaten alive with them in many places, the young girls from the universities who were arrested and spent 20 years in prison, they told me that they woke up the first night that they had never done anything, never saw a bed bug in their lives. Woke up in the middle of the night and they were all over them. Now that was hard for the girls and for any of the women particularly that were in the prison. However, you might say, how do you survive in that kind of place? Well, it was difficult. And while I was in the United States, I talked to a lot of schools, a lot of young people, and they always asked, did you not go mad? Young people, they don't mind if they're in a big crowd together. They're strong and courageous. If they're alone in a single place, they become diffident. And they just wonder, what would we do there? Well, I said you've asked a very good question, because all the people around me went mad. Shrieked their heads off. Why? 5 of them around me went mad. And as each went mad, I got frightened for a moment until I remembered that I had made my consecration to the Blessed Mother and I promised never to be uneasy. And I would sit down and perfectly happy on the floor. I never was as peaceful in my life as in that prison. I know you won't believe that, but I'm telling you the truth. The one reason that they went crazy and I did not was that they did not have what you have and what I had. The only thing that is worth anything in our lives, our faith. The faith had never reached them. They were just ordinary, nice Chinese people who disagreed with the regime and were whipped up and put in the prison. They were left there. They didn't remove them. They left them there, I suppose, for my benefit. But as I suggest, it didn't seem to upset me at all. Once I got my balance, I was able to sleep at night while they were crying. And I was able to carry on with my day. I was busy. I was so busy in that prison. You say, doing what? Well, I thank every priest and sister that ever gave me a bit of Catholic education. I blessed every spiritual director in my seminary, particularly my confessor. He was the greatest psychiatrist I've ever met. I don't go to psychiatrists, but he was the greatest I've ever met. He didn't know it. But you know what we were taught, I hope we're still taught it, that if you go to your confessor and he gives you advice, take it. That God guides his priests. He guided me. He guided that priest. And that priest did not know I was going to go to prison. And yet when I came out of prison and went to see him, I said, thank you, Father, for everything you ever taught me. He said, what did I teach you? He didn't know. But he did. And so after I thanked every professor in my seminary who taught me, we were taught as a priest, and you were taught as a student. I'm sure not to waste your time. Prepare your day, keep to it. Have a schedule. Stick to it. Don't waste. If you let your mind wander, you'll just do nothing. And therefore, I made out a schedule for myself, and from 6 o'clock in the morning when the whistle went until 6 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night when the whistle went, I was busy. I was so busy I couldn't finish my day. I had to go through the Mass. I remember the Mass by rote. I had no vessels, I had no vestments, I had nothing. But I went over it and they made my spiritual communion, which was something which was always taught to us. I don't know if it's taught anymore. But Rana and the big theologians and Thomas, they all speak of it as valid doctrine, spiritual communion. And that was a great blessing in the beginning of the day. Then I had my 3 rosaries and my Stations of the Cross and visited the Blessed Sacrament and all the hymns that I remembered from the Latin hymns that I loved. I sang all through college. And one of my particular hymns was, the one I loved most was St. Thomas's Laudes Sion Salvatore. Does anyone know it? It kept me alive in the prison. Laudes Sion Salvatorem, Laudes Ducem et Pastorem, in Imnis et Sanctis. 26 verses. Absolutely perfect doctrine of the Eucharist. Doesn't leave out one iota in the Latin. And when I heard it sung in English for the first time, it had successfully knocked the bottom out of it. It was written for the Latin words. Anyway, I had all those to console me and to go over them and to meditate on them, and I was busy. I had 2 hours for study. Study what? Nothing. There was nothing to study. But they did allow me to keep my teeth clean. They let me buy a toothbrush and Chinese toothpaste. And on the back of the Chinese toothpaste, it told you in exact terms the number of germs per second that were killed by that particular toothpaste. So I studied that every day, and you counted, I forget the number now, but I did know it then. And I read it every day, and that was part of my spiritual reading. I had nothing else to read. But the point was to occupy yourself from one thing to the next. I composed sermons in English, in French, in Latin, in Chinese. They were helpful, very helpful. And I tried to read all the Chinese. I can speak Chinese fluently, but I cannot read it because I was sent into a parish so early that there was no time to study. Anyway, I must make a long story short. I was eventually brought before a tribunal. I never had a lawyer, never. I was brought before a tribunal, and they told me they were going to expel me out of the country and that I was not to answer anything. They brought me before them, they read out my alleged crimes, and they said, get out and never come back. Well, anyway, I came back, and they brought me to Hong Kong, and from that to England. I was 10 years in England and 12 years in the United States, and now I'm back in that direction again, but not in China. Now, while one period there was particularly difficult in the prison, I'll just mention it because I see Bill Pepley looking at me and he thinks I might forget it. It was a problem I had. While I was asleep, I was punished. Always being punished. And I had nobody to tell me. I never had anybody. And the guard used to come in at one end, open the gate and come down. I didn't hear the gate opening. And he would pop on me and find me asleep, and then I was punished. And then when he left, I didn't know. He might be there for 10 minutes, might be there for an hour. And one day I noticed there was a little sparrow outside my cell. An ordinary little sparrow. And he landed outside the cell, and he hopped around, and obviously he was looking for something to eat. And I kept a little rice for him at my meal, and I would let it dry and flick it around, and he was my TV, watching him hopping about and picking up my rice. That's all I had. And then I noticed that now and again he would whoosh and fly away. And 10 seconds after he flew away, the guard came. He heard the gate opening. God gave him beautiful ears. I couldn't hear it. He heard it. And so, whoosh, and away. So that I was never caught from that on. I would sit up straight when I'd hear him whistle, rub my eyes and keep them wide open, and then I didn't know when the guard was gone. Back and forth and back and forth until whoosh, the bird came back. And when the bird was playing outside my cell, I could even sleep. Now that is absolutely true. I don't know what your explanation was, I know what mine is. The Blessed Mother thought of another scheme to give me a little bit of a break. And like the marriage feast of Cana, where she went to the Lord and said, they have no wine. She probably went and said, Father McGrath has no bird. Now that is perfectly true, and I suppose people have their own calculations what it was. That bird stayed with me all, even though I was moved from one cell to another. One at the back, one upstairs, one downstairs, one in another block. Within 5 minutes, the bird was there. So I think he was a little partial to me. Anyway, eventually, as I say, I was expelled out of that place, and I was, now I'm back in the Far East again. And well, I got 2 years and 8 months in prison. All my little friends, the Chinese, they were the ones that suffered. The ones that joined up to try and keep the church going, and by the way, have kept the church going. They got 10 years, 20 years. The bishop up here got 30 years. Dr. Chang, the vice president of the Shanghai Senatus, got 30 years. I met him 2 weeks ago. He and the wife are out. The president, they took him out and shot him. Now, those people suffered intensely. One girl from Tientsin who set up 400 groups of the Legion in Manchuria. When they caught her, they thought they'd never forgive her, and they kept her 37 years. You don't do that in America for anybody. Not the most vicious crime. Nobody stays that time. This is a lovely young girl, graduate of the University of Beijing. Brilliant. And they tried to get her to help them in the setting up of the Patriotic Church. Now, what is this Patriotic Church? I better come to him before it's too late. I want to give you an opportunity to ask a couple of questions, if you like. The Patriotic Church was set up by the communists. They wanted to destroy. Mao Zedong tried to destroy the church. Well, as you see, what happened? He failed. And if he'd read his history, Dr. Carroll could have told him very clearly what happened to anybody who tried to kill the church. It just didn't work. He tried and he failed. And he died then, and then Deng Xiaoping came along, much more benign, but he saw that Mao Zedong had failed, and so he gave a certain amount of liberty. And the liberty was that if you cut yourself off from Pope John Paul II, we have a perfectly free patriotic church in China. You can have your priests, you can have your sisters, you can have mass every day, you can have your seminaries, whatever you like. But you must cut off from the Pope. Well, of course, that knocks the bottom out of everything for you. And it knocked the bottom out of everything for the Chinese, too. They just refused. But some got weak. By the way, from 1949 to 1952, there were 20 million executions. That's not my figure. That's Time magazine of that year, 1954. Look it up. 20 million executions in 3 years. I suppose you also know that last year, the Guinness Book of Records had Mao Zedong in it as a winner. For what? Swimming? Oh, no. For killing a nation. 60 million executions. So really, Stalin wasn't very much. Nor was Hitler. Now, with that kind of a thing, are you surprised that the poor Chinese were frightened? Frightened so much that some of them even agreed to separate from the Pope, and in their heart of hearts they said, I don't mean this, I don't want to separate from him, but if they must, if they want me to do this, I will. Even they would think, perhaps I can say Mass for the people and give them communion. Well, that was, it's a thought, but is it valid? Anyway, the vast majority of the Chinese refused. They refused to go in on that, and now, at the end of a number of years of great efforts in that direction, they recognized they failed, and failed hopelessly. I was telling Bill Pepley today about two of my colleagues, two priests from Jiangxi province. They were arrested shortly after their ordination. They spent 30 years in prison, and every year or so they would be brought out and they'd be shown in a big church, and they said, there are thousands of Catholics there waiting on you. Will you join the Patriotic Church and look after them? Hear confession, say Mass. They all said no. And they were brought back to prison again. Well, now, they've tried that so long that they have, you might have noticed in the papers lately, if you're reading them, they don't talk too much about the Patriotic, not really a Patriotic Church, Patriotic Association, which tries to guide the people. Now, they are not talking about it, and they're still trying to conduct their own church. They have their own seminary. And the strange thing about it is today, now this is within the last few years, that the big churches of Shanghai, Tianjin, and Beijing, and so on, they're packed with people. And the Holy Father has told them already. He's told them directly and otherwise, that let them seek the sacrament. He doesn't say, let them seek the sacrament. That means that if they go to the churches and their confessions, go to confession. Receive communion. Hear Mass. It's a valid Mass. But, strictly speaking, illicit if it is a patriotic priest. But he's still validly ordained. Just like there was an Orthodox man in the prison beside me for a while, Russian. And I told him, Leo, if you want absolution, I can give it to you. And if your priest was here, an Orthodox priest from Russia, I would ask him to absolve me. That's the rule of the church, especially in danger. But they still, the Pope tells them to go to the sacraments. Now, who are the priests that are in the churches at the moment? And if you go to China as a visitor, you'll see them in every church. You'll have one Mass after another. And you might even see this, that when one priest goes up on the altar, and he might be a patriotic priest, the people leave. A lot of the people walk out of the church, and they wait until their priest, the good priest, comes along. And when he goes on the altar, they all come back. Now, I've heard that so often that I wouldn't want to disbelieve it. And that is the situation, that something is changing in China, and we hope that very soon that either that communism would disappear altogether, or that there would be some kind of a different regime that would allow people to practice the religion just as they do, and to be loyal to the Pope. The fact is that in every single church that visitors go, they hear the people singing, praying for the Pope, praying for John Paul II. The communists are standing nearby, they do nothing. They cannot stop the loyalty of the Chinese Catholics to the Holy Father. Now, it's good to hear that. I suggest that the situation at the moment is a little bit mixed up. We don't get enough news. Lots of the true bishops and priests have been arrested within the last few months. But at the same time, we're hoping that things will smooth out. So I would suggest that, please, if you're interested, and I'm sure you are in these things, there is a country that it's only after this is all over that they will really be able to write their history. But in the meantime, please, pray for them. Now, it's just after 15:15. I'm going to stop in case anybody has any questions they would like to ask or like me to elucidate. Yes.
In founding the Patriotic Church, you're establishing that to what extent were the founding of Mormon Catholics who were priests, or were they more successful among the Western men?
No, it was all the same. Everything was stopped. Buddhism was stopped. Muslims were stopped. Just it was against religion. And then when they started the Patriotic Church, they also allowed Protestants a certain amount of freedom. That's why you very often hear on radios today, I heard it lately in Manila, that the Protestants would say they have about 200 million Protestants. Well, I doubt that very much. I don't know how it could be. It might be that 200 million people have Bibles or have access to Bibles. I don't know. I don't know how it's calculated. But certainly we know in the Catholic Church that while we work very hard, the priests, bishops and sisters, all in China, and yet we had only 3 million Catholics. Now you have had the most appalling persecution. And we have perhaps 10 to 15 million. In other words, you can't put them down. And where does it come from? Like I mentioned in Tianjin, the cathedral, one priest, Chinese priest, he went there, that's his home, and he went into the cathedral and he found one whole side covered with young people. And they were all, it was a black mass for somebody who had died, and they were singing the Dies Irae. Do we remember that? That was one of the ones I loved, and I sang the 26 verses of that too. The Dies Irae, all of them singing the Dies Irae, without books. And he went over to them and he said, "Where did you learn this Latin hymn?" "Oh, our parents, they taught them. There were no teachers, but the parents kept it on." "Do you understand what you're saying?" "No." Of course they didn't understand what they were saying. It was Latin. But indeed, in the old days when we attended Latin masses, we didn't understand either. Now, hope any other query? Yes?
A couple of related questions, Father. Are there some Catholic missionaries now?
Are there?
They're not
allowed to do anything. The Chinese, what they would say would be the Chinese ministers. So they have a lot of Chinese ministers. They, in a home, they would get people together and read the Bible. If that was their church in that place, they would allow it. Just as they allow us in all the big churches in Beijing and Tianjin. They allow wherever the church is, the people can pray and so on. But if you leave that church and go down the street and begin to talk about the gospel, you're deported. They have already deported quite a number of Mormons and fundamentalists. They won't allow them to do that. In other words, I repeat, you are allowed to believe. You are strictly forbidden to evangelize. And that was the main purpose that the poor old Legion of Mary got us so hard. That was its main method, to evangelize, baptize, instruct, visit the sick, and go to the people in the homes and make sure that they were saying their prayers. Yes?
Is the underground church in China now able to train and ordain
the priests
who are true
to the Holy Father? Good. What is called the underground church, it's a little bit of a, not quite understandable term at the moment. The underground church, that was the church that held on to loyalty to the Pope. Have they got bishops and priests? Yes, lots of them. But they are being picked up. as they're caught. And have been. Have they seminaries? Yes. The seminaries have been destroyed. Somebody who told on them where the seminaries were, and the seminaries were, could not be in a place like this, but they would have the philosophy house 10 miles down the road, and the theology house 20 miles up there, separated and keep the people moving. And yet somebody told on them, and the communists came down and disbanded them all and took away the students. But at the same time, the underground church is terribly strong. That is the one really I'm speaking of. And the underground church and the patriotic church that is not really patriotic at the moment, there are a great number of loyal people in it. They're getting pretty close to one another. And they're beginning more to understand one another, so that we really hope for some kind of a much better picture coming out within the next couple of years. That's why I say I've just come from Hong Kong, where everybody is running away from Hong Kong. They run away from Hong Kong. If you've got any money, you go to Canada, come to America, and then you go back to Hong Kong. And you continue to do your business, because you can multiply and quadruple your money by just staying there. It's a fabulous place to make a bit of money. And they'll wait until the last year, and if the communists are going to come in, they'll probably leave then. But the church is all right, doing very well. For instance, I know I just met this Dr. Chang, who was the head of the Catholic hospital in Shanghai. He's been 30 years in prison, and I asked him and his wife and the children, and I said, "Where did you go to Mass?" They said, "We never went to Mass to any public church in Shanghai." And all his friends, they all go to a private house where there's a priest saying the Mass. So you have an extraordinary, some would call it stubbornness. Well, it's a good stubbornness. I said the other picture, where the patriotics are mixed a little bit with the undergrounds and so on, we hope that it would clarify itself. But really, nothing but prayer will do anything at the moment. Yes?
Father, what do you know of the organization called Free the Fathers?
Well, that was started by somebody who is not a Catholic, actually. And he has done tremendous work in notifying the world that certain fathers were still in prison and suffering unjustly. And like Amnesty International, it has had a great impetus on the other side. And many, I think, have been released just because of the pressure. That is true. Very good. Yes? Had it anything to do with? No, it was not a Catholic movement by any means. But what we were afraid of at the time was that they would blame the Catholics for it. It wasn't. It was a national movement. The people in China, they hate communism. Hate it. Just very briefly, I spent 16 years living with a Chinese family. I had no house. Lovely family took me in. They made pickles and tofu. And I loved all of them. And I eat them. You had a grandfather, grandmother, 3 sons, 3 daughters-in-law, and all the grandchildren and me. That's where I worked. I got to know them inside out. And I tell you what they did not need. They did not need burglar alarms. We can't live without a burglar alarm. There was always somebody at the front door and the back door. We never closed the door. We didn't need babysitters. Always the granny or the old man were there, somebody there. We didn't need nursing homes. When they got old, we nursed them. And when they died, we kept them in the house. We kept the old man in the house for 10 days before we buried them. That's Confucius. Respect for your grandparents and your parents. It's a beautiful doctrine, and the Chinese live it to a T, and so do the Filipinos. But as you know, we have difficulties in this way. The housing problem was solved. One house did. Everybody lived in it. They had their own independence and their own quarters and so on. But they obeyed the old man, and he wasn't harsh. Something I admire very much, and I think we do need that kind of, look to that kind of thing. Yes? Well, you're inferring that the Legion still continues in China. I wouldn't say so. It was absolutely murdered. And the bishop up here in Connecticut, he told the Legion groups in Shanghai just before he was arrested, better not to hold your public meetings. In other words, you'd have no statue and you'd have no flowers or anything else. Arrange yourself to get together and have a play some other games and do your work, your assignments that way. And I know all my legionaries who've been in prison for so long. They did their work in the prisons. What they had learned in the Legion, they practiced all the time in the labor camps, in the prisons, and in the hospitals and so on. So actually, as a name, you cannot mention Legion of Mary today. They don't like it. I was up in Ottawa about seven or eight years ago, and the first bishops came out of China, first time they ever came out to have a meeting in Montreal. And the rector of the university there knew that I had been in China, and he asked me to come in and see them. I went in and I met Fu Tie San, the top bishop in Beijing, and I met all the other bishops. And I went to their meeting that evening in the University of Ottawa. And when I heard them talking, my goodness, I couldn't stand what they were saying. And there was a little Chinese legionary beside me, and she said, "Father, are you going to sit there and say nothing?" Well, if I felt like saying nothing, I couldn't say nothing after that prod. So I got up and I challenged the man who was talking. And he was very upset. And I continued to put my hand up. I said, "I'd like to finish my sentence." This man wouldn't let me finish a sentence. He kept butting in, so much so that the people and the crowd of the people there began to laugh. I said I was in China for 24 years. I wanted to find out, after 40 years, did they think the same way about the Legion of Mary as they did then? So I asked him. I said, "I started something to help the priests in China. It was called the Legion of Mary." Well, it was like a storm. He jumped up and he said, "My God! Legion of Mary, anti-communist, used by the bishops to oppose communists." Well, he lost his temper and he lost his crowd. Fu Tie San bishop criticized him afterwards for not being calmer. But I learned that day that they still are frightened of evangelization, no more. Just that. And they do not want the Legion of Mary to be in there, but we hope within a few years that it will be back. And the girl who was 37 years in prison, she was 24 when I knew her. Brilliant student of Tientsin. Now she's 66. She's in Dublin. Last time I met her, she said, "I'm waiting for the day that China will declare China open to missionaries." She wants to go back and continue her work as envoy of the Legion of Mary. So it hasn't changed her mind. Time's gone.
Thank you, Father. Thank you. Any other questions for Father? So thank you very much, Father, for coming here tonight.